The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
You know, I'm kind of feeling well after this game. We had a weak lineup, but we still pulled out the victory. The bullpen was dominant. Newcomb looked better than we ever thought. He was kind of fighting for his job here tonight with Bayo coming back. I think he deserves a spot as the last guy in the bullpen. I think he's a little bit better than Winkowski. He's definitely better than what Criswell has shown so far. So I don't think he's going to be DFA'd yet. So.
Nice. And where can folks bug you on Twitter if they want to?
You guys can find me at N Diamond Media.
Sounds good. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a little confused on how you can have a negative 11 run differential and then win the series. And that's the craziest thing. You know, you lose the first game, you're down 16-1. You just get buried. Tanner Houck had probably the worst start of his career. Then you win game two in a very good bounce back performance. A couple guys go deep. We'll get into that. You put up seven. That's a good bounce back. And then in game three, with a spot starter, essentially, a scrap heap guy on the mound, he shuts him down, and David Hamilton puts the only run up, and that's all you needed to win the series. So that's just nuts. That's just how it went in a nutshell. Red Sox back to 500 with a record of 10-10. That's good enough for third place in the American League East. The Blue Jays, Yankees, both above us. Only one back in the win column, but officially two games back on the division. So we got the lowly White Sox coming up. So hopefully you can put up three there like you should have last time. And the pitching's almost where you want it. Crochet's going to be pitching in that one. Houck might be two. Well, maybe two out of three. We'll settle for that. But yeah, anyway, it was a wonky series, but a very unlikely series W.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, you know, you finally get back to 500. So you're 10-10 now. You're back sort of in the middle of the pack in the standings. So that's at least something to feel pretty good about. But do any of us feel like they turned a corner in the series? Like, yeah, you're back at 500. You're heading home. You're facing a bad White Sox team, but then you remember that bad White Sox team kind of took it to you in Chicago not too long ago. So, you know, do any of you feel like they turned a corner? Nick, I'll start with you. Like, do you feel like they're back, or is it still, no, I've got concerns and I'm not optimistic heading into this weekend?
I mean, if it wasn't the White Sox, I probably wouldn't be super optimistic heading into the weekend. I still think they will probably win the series, but yeah, there is a couple things still we could be worried about. Casas still behind. He's had a few harder hit balls, but he's still lagging behind the rest of the guys. The catcher's position is kind of a black hole still. Navarez came up in the bases loaded, one out, popped it to the shortstop infield fly. You know, there's still holes in this offense that aren't, there's no reinforcements coming soon. So unless Roman Anthony's plugged into this lineup, I don't think there's very much that could be helped. Unless there's just the approach change.
Terry, are you back on the bandwagon, or are you still kind of dreading what's coming?
I don't know if I'm dreading necessarily, and I still cautiously optimistic have us as a playoff team. But as far as the near term, Nick just weighed in on Casas, who was 1-for-10 on the series. We're not getting into the bottom five, so I'll just throw that out there. Devers is literally 1-for-his-last-21. So his one hit this series was a double. That was in the middle game. I don't feel super great, going into it, but perhaps something gets sparked. I mean, if you can get Casas going, you can get Rafaela going. If Narvaez can give you just a little bit more, and then everybody else that is supposed to do their job, then I think we're okay. I haven't been that pessimistic about the pitching all season. It's been the offense. That's been what ails us, and that's what needs to get back on track.
Yeah, and this should be a pivotal weekend for them with Chicago coming in. Again, I know they put it on you last time, but they're still a wretched team. Wretched lineup, bad pitching. You're back home at Fenway. The weather is nice, so they can't complain about the weather anymore. It's going to be 75 degrees on Saturday, so they can't make that excuse. It's marathon weekend, so you've got that iconic 11 a.m. game on Monday that everyone looks forward to. This should be the weekend that sort of, propels you forward. You just took 2 out of 3 from the Rays. You get that nice off day on Thursday. Bregman's coming back from paternity leave. Like, everything should be positive. So, you steal the series against the Rays. Yeah, it was ugly at times, especially that Monday game, but you still did it. And now you're heading home against a really bad team. You should be fully loaded, ready to go. So, and then you've got Seattle after that, and I'm not a big believer in Seattle either. So, you got 7 games coming up where I feel like if this team really hits its stride, you could win 5 of 7. I mean, I don't think that's an unrealistic possibility for this next week. So, again, weather's turning good, so the bats should hopefully come alive this weekend, but we'll see. Obviously, last time we played Chicago, it didn't go so well. So hopefully that sticks with them and they bounce back this time.
They're about to be 0-3 since we left. That'll be 3 straight drop to Oakland, who, by the way, I picked to win the West. I think I was on drugs that night. I think they're right around 500, though. But the White Sox have 4 wins on the season, half of them courtesy of us. Yeah. Speaking of drunk, I may as well just have my man card revoked right now. What do you think I'm drinking? It's alcohol.
I mean, I see the Whole Foods label, so I'm already a bit concerned.
I think that's just what the bar had to pour these into. But you should be concerned. Yeah, it's blueberry crumble cider.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's tasty, but it's not going to put any hair on my chest. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
You need to have a whiskey to balance that out after that.
It's tasty. That's all I can say, but we'll see. I only had half of it left, so 16 ounces, so I won't be cooked by the end of it. But
yeah, it's not for me either.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, crap.
Beer.
You're a what?
I want my beer to taste like beer.
Okay. Well, I'll have a Modelo. I mean, that's my go-to. Yeah. Heineken is okay. I do like ciders. I like anything apple. Any local apple ciders. If they have Angry Orchard, I'm just going to have a Modelo. I don't like Angry Orchard, but if they got a good local cider, I love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ciders are the bomb. It's just, if you get the right one. I don't know about a blueberry one.
I taste a lot of cinnamon in this, too, which makes it even more girly, but yeah,
it's more like a fall drink you got there. So save that for October when we're hopefully watching some playoff baseball.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they did steal the series from the Rays. So as usual, we were going to do our top five list for the week. So Terry, you are in the leadoff spot for us tonight. Who do you got coming in at number five?
I am going to take my favorite player on the Red Sox. That's Jarren Duran, who's been pretty quiet this season. Still not hitting lefties like he has been. So if anything needs to be addressed, there's that. He did hit his first home run on the series, on the year, excuse me, in game two. So I thought he might come out of the gates a little bit harder than that. But a hit in every game. Drove in two in that middle game, also walked twice. So that was a little bit more than baby steps, I would say. But it's a step in the right direction, especially for your leadoff hitter, who is not a guy you want slumping on a nightly basis. You don't want one out in the first inning every night. So good series for him. He did have the revelations of his depression issues from a couple of years ago. I don't know if rehashing that perhaps, got him into a bit of a funk. But, I mean, he hasn't really been himself the last couple of weeks until this series. But it was a good one.
Nick, thoughts on Duran?
You know, it was great seeing him get his first homer of the season, especially the other way, opposite field to left field. I think he got credited with a double today on that little drop pop up in right field. You know, it's always great to see him hustling out of the box. You know, a lot of our guys probably Trevor Story pop up to right field, put his head down, he'd be standing at first base, or it doesn't matter. But, you know, with Duran, he's always going to be on second base. He could have been on third, honestly, but with his speed, but you never know. I'm glad to see that he's kind of bouncing out of it. Hopefully that little drop double will get him going, going into this home series with the off day tomorrow. I think a lot of these guys are tired. So, you know, good bounce back series, but I still expect more out of him after what he put up last year.
Yeah, definitely good to see him get on base. His average is now up to a measly 235, which, you know, not a lot of people are talking about, but I think at the same time, we weren't talking about it because we weren't super concerned long-term with Duran. We know that, you know, he's a great player and that he'll turn it around. I do wonder if the attention that was put on the documentary and like Nesson kind of doing a whole pregame about it and doing like mid-game interviews too, like that was a lot more attention than I think even he expected or that the Red Sox expected to be put on that. And you do wonder, like, again, this is a guy who struggles with that stuff. Like, that could be, you know, all of a sudden he has become this ambassador. And I think he's capable of that. But that's, you know, that happened really quick. Like, the documentary came out and it was kind of like a quiet release. You know, people were more into the season. And then all of a sudden it's like that episode exploded. And I wonder if that just kind of screwed him up a little bit or he was sort of like, a little bit just like, wow, not expecting that. And that affected his play. But I think now it's kind of worn off. People have worked their way through it. They've worked their way through that episode. And hopefully now that, you know, the attention has died down, he can really just focus on what he does on the field. And yeah, the home run was great to see. It's great to see him hustle, you know, on that drop pop-up. I didn't love him trying to steal third after that. I don't know if that was a core call or if that was Duran going on his own, but he got a pretty good jump, but Danny Jansen's a good catcher back there. You know, it's not like Blake Sabol's back there. So I didn't love that, especially in such a close game, but that is more what Jarren Duran wants to do. He wants to use his speed. He wants to be a disruptor and he wants to be a catalyst. And for this offense to get fixed and start working again, that's exactly what Jarren Duran has to be. He has to be that catalyst out of the leadoff spot. So good series for him. It was good to see him kind of bounce back and do the things that we're used to seeing him do. Hopefully it's just now this starts a trend and it's, you know, it's not just 1-for-4 every game. It's now 2-for-4 or 3-for-4. And, you know, it really starts to build up to what he did last year. So definitely a good start and looking forward to seeing more as they return home.
Real quick. It's mostly lefties that has his metrics down. He only has three hits on the season against a lefty hitter. None for extra base. Well, he does have a triple, so I guess I shouldn't say that. No doubles, but hitting 143 against lefties. If you look at his numbers just against righties, I mean, he's hitting a somewhat respectable 268 with a 333 on base. And just pulling up his career numbers, just to underscore how solid he is against lefties, on his career, well, I thought it was better than that, but yeah, 239 with an on base just under 300. Maybe this year's numbers have dropped that a little bit, but I thought he was hitting around 250 or so against lefties, which is serviceable. You know, I mean, you see guys that are just lost at the plate, against them. So, and getting back to the Netflix thing, I just, when it got to the point where his parents had to give a statement, I don't know. I thought we're making too much of a thing of it, you know, for a team that's like not playing very well, you know. So I don't know. It's hard to criticize. I mean, everybody wants mental health to improve in every community and in every walk of life. But I think it did put him into a funk a little bit.
Yeah, it would not shock me at all if it did. But again, now that, you know, that's kind of coming past, hopefully he's more focused now and it's mostly behind him. So hopefully this series is a sign of things to come. So with that, we'll move to number four on our top five, and we're going to go with Sean Newcomb for this one, who pitched the final game of the series, 4 2/3, didn't give up a run. Nothing super flashy from him as usual, 4 Ks, couple of walks, but at the end of the day, he kept the Rays off the board, and if it weren't for David Hamilton, you know, that game could have gone a lot differently because the Sox bats just kind of fell asleep again against admittedly a good starter in Zach Littell. But yeah, for Newcomb, this was huge because, again, this is a guy that, you know, barely got his way onto the roster, got the spring training invite, pitched well in spring training. And really, just because of injuries, he got that number five spot. And his first couple of starts were rough. You know, you kind of saw like, yeah, this is a sort of a journeyman 31-year-old who only throws 92 miles an hour. It's a great story. He's a local kid, you know, always dreamt of playing for the Red Sox. That's great. But for a team that's looking to compete, you know, every time he took the mound, you're kind of like holding your breath just a little bit because a guy who throws that soft against, you know, teams that can hit the ball hard, and especially in a ballpark like this, that's kind of a joke because it's a Yankee ballpark, honestly. You worried about that, and I certainly did. I thought for sure he was going to get tuned up in that game, and he persevered through it. He battled through it, and, you know, he only went 4 2/3, but your bullpen was pretty well rested. Cora did a nice job, I think, managing the bullpen at the end there, giving Whitlock his two innings. So, you know, Cora did what he had to do as well, which, you know, we haven't been saying that for a while either. So at the end of the day, Newcomb did exactly what you needed him to do. I have no idea what his future holds. If, you know, once guys start coming back, if he's your swing man, I'm fine with that. You know, especially since he is a lefty, you'll need that. But this was a good start from him. And it's nice that someone other than Garrick Rochet kind of served as not a stopper because he won the game before, but served as like a clinch, you know, like a clutch pitcher. Like, okay, I need to go out there and win the series. And Newcomb did that. So that was cool to see. Nick, what did you think of Newcomb's performance?
I was very happy. It was a solid performance, 4 2/3. Exactly what you said. I'm very happy that Cora pulled him in that situation. I think it was about to get out of hand, honestly, if he didn't bring in a righty. I know the Rays started 9 righties today against soft-throwing Sean Newcomb, like a three-quarter arm slot. So it kind of set up perfectly for the Rays to dominate him and just knock him around. But he executed his pitches. He hit his. He was hitting that inside corner very well today against the righty. Every time he gave up a base hit, it felt like he had a double play right after. So he was efficient and he was good enough to win the game. So I think he deserves a spot to stay on the roster, whether it's that long relief guy or not. So we'll see. I think that's it. I don't know if they can carry 3 lefties in the bullpen. They might run out of right-handed options, but I really do think he's better than Criswell and Winkowski at the moment. So he did his job.
Terry.
Like I said in the intro, I mean, I thought there was a very, very slim chance the Red Sox were going to be able to win this game. And, you know, he went out there, he gave you 4 2/3 scoreless innings. His metrics are wonky as hell. You know, he's got a ton of walks. He's got a 4.67 walk per nine. That's pretty high. His strikeout per nine, though, is just under 10, and that's well above average. I think league average is right around 7 or so. So he's getting guys out, but he's not going deep into games. The defense kind of screwed him, you know, in the White Sox game. That was the loss by 11. I want to say that was when Casas had his blunder, but only 2 of the 6 runs he gave up were earned. But it's just the walks, you know. If he can rein in the walks and keep guys off base and either continue to punch them out or pitch to contact a little bit better, he would make an extremely tough case to take that spot away from him. Now you've got Brian Bayo coming back next week. You've got Hunter Dobbins pitching in the White Sox series, and he pitched okay in his previous start. Wasn't anything, you know, special. I mean, I would like to see more of Dobbins. You know, there's that curiosity there. Who is he? What is his ceiling? And I think you always want to see guys like that. I was a big fan of Richard Fitz just because I just wanted to see more. Like, he was just good enough to make me want to see more. That's where I'm at with Newcomb right now. So I don't know what Giolito's timetable is. He's probably at least a week behind Bayo. So I think when it comes down to it, because Dobbins does have options and Newcomb doesn't, I think Newcomb's going to continue to get the starts here. So he should get at least 2 or 3 more, you know, give you a few more looks at him, and then try to determine what type of role he might have if you do want to keep him on the roster. But as Nick said, you got Justin Wilson in the pen. You got Brennan Bernardino. I guess it would be fairly easy to option him, even though he's pitched fine this year. He didn't end off last season great in August and September, but you've got Wilson and Chapman in there for sure. So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, it's hard to take the ball away from a guy who goes out there, pitches his ass off, and gives you a chance to win. So the Red Sox have won 2 of his 4 starts. He got a, actually he wasn't credited with the win, but the Red Sox won 5-4 in his second start. That was in the St. Louis series. So we'll see. But I like the punch outs. I hate the walks.
Yeah, the walks are definitely a concern, especially when he is in that starting role, because he doesn't make it that far into the game once he starts piling up the walks. So hurts his pitch count and ends up, you know, having to be taken out early. But if he's moving to the bullpen anyway, or if he's going to like a swing role, it won't be as big of a deal. So I wouldn't be surprised if he stays on the team longer than Justin Wilson does. I think Justin Wilson sucks. I think he's cooked. He sucked last year. I know he pitched well in this series, but I don't know. It wouldn't shock me if Newcomb keeps his job in the bullpen and Wilson gets DFA'd at some point.
And the other thing, too, is you can never have too much depth. And that's, you know, that's a cliche. People mention that ad nauseum, especially early in the season. But I think we can be fairly optimistic. Bayo's going to come back and he's going to be serviceable. There might be some blips in there. He does have issues at times going 5 full innings, and he has trouble finishing guys off, but he's going to come back and he's going to be serviceable. Giolito is a major wild card right now. So we haven't really seen him, you know, against bona fide major leaguers. The last stat line I saw, he did punch out a few. I think he walked at least 1 or 2 He went three or four innings. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't anything that fires me up. That's, you know, makes me feel like, oh, wait till he comes back. So we'll see what happens there. But I think there's a good chance they're going to hang on to him for at least a little while. You know, just to make sure everyone else is firing on all cylinders. And Tanner Houck is a conversation for another show, but he's a mess right now. So who's to say he's either A, not healthy, or B, just can't hold it down in the rotation right now. And that's how Newcomb stays in. I mean, Houck has an ERA right around 9 or so. So there's a lot of different cases that can be made for Newcomb, and everybody loves a great comeback story. And he pitched last year, I think, was it for Oakland? I have it right here. Oakland, seven games, and he didn't even start any of them. He didn't make a start since 2023, and that was with Oakland as well. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Either way, he should be around for a little bit. So he pitched very well in this series, so good on him. So we will move to number three on our top five. Nick, who do we got at number three?
We got Garrett Whitlock. Garrett Whitlock tonight looked absolutely nasty. He looked like vintage 2021 Garrett Whitlock. 2 innings, 4 Ks. I think he had 6 or 7 swings and misses. The fastball was up to 95, 96. He was diving up in the zone, getting swings and misses with his sweeper slider. The changeup was good. He was throwing it for strikes. I think he had like 2 or 3 balls all game. This is the guy we should have had since 2021. We should have had him as reliever in 2022. We should have had him as reliever all throughout the last couple seasons here. This is the guy that the Red Sox front office has kept continually trying to put in there as a starter. They've ruined him, but it's glad to have him back. He looked dominant today, and I'm excited to see him going forward. Hopefully we get more outings like this.
Terry.
I've said it once, I've said it twice, at least 3 times. I'll quadruple down on it right now. Garrett Whitlock is the best reliever in the Red Sox bullpen. And I don't know if this is the best way to utilize him. I do kind of like him as a closer. Justin Slayton came in today and closed that out, which kind of surprised me because Chapman was only needed yesterday for one out when things were getting a little bit dicey there in the night. So they brought him in. Kelly was having trouble just kind of closing it out, but and we said privately in the war room, I think it was you, Nick, actually, why does Alex Cora run him into the ground, you know? And I mean, he might be, is he your second best righty in the pen, Kelly?
He could be, and they just ruin him. They try to make him like a 9-out guy when he should be a 3-out guy. His stuff is nasty. Why try to, like, if you get 3 outs out of him, why push him anymore? If he's good for you, that's what he's good for. I just take what you can from him. He's got great stuff, but it's just hard to, they try to get 9 outs out of him. It's just stupid, in my opinion. They're going to ruin him. And this is the second time Cora's done it, and there's no explanation.
It's like he's trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm trying to get the bullpen ERA up here. Let's see. I'll grab that shortly. But the bullpen's been pretty stout, so it's hard to complain here about, you know, the production. But getting back to Whitlock, like you were saying, Nick, or maybe it was you, Jason, actually. He's a reliever, and you're seeing that right now. Like, he lost 2 years of his career and probably had an extra Tommy John surgery for them trying to force him into being a starter when he teased you at times and, you know, did string together some nice starts. But this is where he could be one of the best relievers in the league. And, I mean, if we were in sell mode, luckily we're not, but this July, I mean, teams would be begging us for Garrett Whitlock to pitch in their bullpen. And I mean, just watching him, he just destroyed them tonight. It was just wiping them out with all of his pitches. You know, he was locating everything. He was getting swings and misses. And so I'm glad that he's finally got that defined role. I don't know if I love the two inning thing. It's working for now, so I guess just don't mess with it. But I think he could be one of the best closers in the league if he's able to keep it. And we've seen Chapman. I don't know if he blew the save. I can't remember if the game was. I think the game was tied when in the White Sox series when we dropped that one. So it wasn't a blown save, but it was a blown hold, if that counted. But yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But it's fun to watch. It feels like 2021 again with him. And for some effed up reason, we did go pretty deep that postseason with Garrett Whitlock at the back of the bullpen. So
yeah, if it weren't for, you know, Chapman still pitching pretty well, I mean, this guy should and would be your closer. He's that good. And I agree with Nick. They wasted their time trying to make him into a starter. And that was just them trying to cover up their mistakes for not being more aggressive in the starting pitching market, both through trades and free agency. You know, they got lazy at that position. They got lazy at the market. And they said, well, we'll just stretch out Garrett Whitlock. And it didn't work. So I'm glad that that experiment is over and done with. I still get worried that if they lose more starters, that they're going to say, well, you know, we do have Whitlock and, you know, he's feeling really healthy. He feels really strong. We might try to stretch him out. Like, don't even be tempted. If they get more injuries, go find someone on the scrap heap. I'd rather that than try to screw with Garrett Whitlock again. This, you know, he was a gift. All right. He was a Rule 5 from the Yankees. You turn him into a really good reliever. Then you screwed him up. You lost 2 years of his productivity. Now he's back, and he's probably on the best roster he's been on since coming to the Red Sox. So use him properly. Now, the two-inning thing, I feel like that's already kind of been Cora talking out of both sides because we've seen him come in for just one. So, you know, Cora at the beginning of the year saying, oh, he's always going to pitch two innings when he goes in, that was already a lie because he's brought him in. He's only pitched an inning at times. So they clearly have some sort of pitching plan for him that involves the two innings versus one. I don't know how they differentiate that, but either way, as long as it's a plan to keep him healthy and have him at a point where in September, October, he's still ready to go for that eighth, maybe ninth inning by that point, then I'm fine with it. Do whatever. It, you know, just figure it out. Keep him healthy and keep him at the back end of that bullpen because you saw what he can do tonight. He is absolutely nasty. So, and when you've got him, you've got Kelly, who, you know, if you don't overextend him, is really good. You know, Justin Slayton, when he's healthy and he's on, he looks really good. You know, Chapman's doing his thing. Like, your bullpen suddenly is just, we don't talk about it that much, which is good because they're just doing their job. They're going in there. They're having clean innings for the most part. Like, there hasn't been a whole lot of messy stuff. I mean, yeah, the 16-1 game when, you know, Fulmer came in, he wasn't great, but that's a guy he called up from AAA. That's a, you know, guy trying to reinvent his career. So that, you know, he's not a long-term bullpen guy for you. The guys who are, Bernardino, Slayton, all these guys, they've pitched really well. So Whitlock's a big part of that because you can definitely rely on him now. So hopefully he keeps it up and just, you know, keep him in that back end role. And we'll see. We'll see going forward who gets more ninth inning opportunities, whether it stays Chapman or whether Whitlock starts to slide his way in there, because I wouldn't be surprised if he does. He's just that damn good. So really impressive stuff from him.
So just some numbers real quick. This kind of surprises me. Where do you think the Red Sox rank in ERA?
Like total team ERA?
Yeah.
How many middle teams? Of the pack.
I'll say about 12. Yeah.
I'd say like 15th or 16th. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason's a little bit closer. We're 18th with a 3.96 ERA. Now, that could have been blown up in a couple of bad games.
It was blown up in the health game.
It could have been, yeah, because yeah. Fulmer gave up, what, three? Well, actually, that game wasn't too bad. Fulmer gave up three, Weissert, Winkowski scoreless, and then Bernardino gave up one. He gave up a home run somewhere in there. So a little bit wonky there. We're eighth in strikeouts, which is good. I'll take that. Shockingly, despite being middle of the pack with ERA, only three teams have given up fewer home runs than our bullpen. The Orioles are one, the Mets are the other, and the lowly St. Louis Cardinals. Those are the only teams whose bullpens have given up fewer home runs. So the balls aren't leaving the yard. They're just getting put in play. So we'll see what happens. I would still say that as we get closer to the deadline, presuming that we're competitive and well above 500, I'm not saying that's safe, but I think the bullpen is where we're going to have to address things.
Yeah, they'll still probably need to add someone around the deadline, especially if they are competing and they are really going for a playoff push. You know, there might be an injury, you know, here and there. Weissert might drop off the table, or, you know, who knows. So, yeah, I think they will have to be aggressive. And there's going to be, you know, let's face it, every trade deadline, the reliever market is probably the busiest of any position. So they're going to be competing with a lot of other teams, not just in their league, but in their division too, for the same relievers. So hopefully Breslow stays aggressive, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Slayton was nasty in that final inning. I was kind of surprised they went to him, like I said, with Chapman only having pitched one out yesterday. But that kind of bears watching, because Slayton was kind of a popular pick with our crew behind the scenes. A few hosts liked him, so wouldn't rule him out, but this bullpen's been solid. Yeah, I thought it was going to be potentially our biggest weakness, and it's been the lineup. So,
yeah, they've been good, definitely. We will move now to number two on our top five. Terry, this is your guy. Who do we got?
I get stuck with the crappy ones every time. And he has been hitting pretty well. Let me get his numbers up. All right, so on the series, we're going with Trevor Story, who was 3-for-12. Had a couple of hits in the second game. Still striking out at a good clip, not walking at a good clip, only one walk in the series. But surprisingly, he's hitting .299 right now. Let's just call it .300. With a .325 on base. Again, not a guy really known for drawing a ton of walks, but three dingers on the year. I'm just going to say, I mean, you'll take it, right? You'll take it based on the fact he's really given us nothing. He hasn't really stayed on the field throughout his tenure here. So we're halfway through April, and he's not really looking any worse for the wear. I will say this. I don't love his arm at shortstop. He still has a noodle arm. He got somebody out. It was, I forget the guy's name. It was their right fielder. I forget.
Oh, Caminario?
Yeah. I don't even know if that was right. But close enough, right? Closer than I got. I thought he was a fast runner, but he wasn't moving at a good clip, and it was a terrible throw, but Story still got him out, and O'Brien and Marloney were raving, oh, what a great play by Story for sticking with it. And it was a dribbler into the dirt by the time it got to Casas. So, you know, he's a better shortstop than what we saw with Kike Hernandez, obviously, but 2019 Trevor Story defense is long gone at this point. But you'll take the bat. All winter long, we were saying we'll take the defense, but right now the bat has kind of kept us in it. And he did in the Chicago series. I know the early week guys covered that, but I mean, he broke the tie, hit the go-ahead run. And, you know, we probably take the L in that series. So I don't know what his future is, but question for you guys. Does this, like, do you have a slight chance of moving him? If this keeps up and this is who he is, and I don't know if it's who he is, but if by July it's who he is, and that'll be the most sustained run he's had since he's been here, even though it's only 3 months long, is he movable?
I still say no because of the contract.
I agree.
You'd have to eat something, but
why would you want to at that point? I mean, unless Marcel Meyer's betting 400, if he's producing like this, why would you move him? You kind of need him. And he's right-handed.
True. I think it gets complicated when both Meyer and Anthony are up, I would say. That's when it gets really complicated. But I guess what I'm wondering is, maybe I should have framed it this way. Is he as unmovable as Masataki Yoshida?
I don't think so. I think you can make a case that a team, you know, shortstop's more of a premium position. If a playoff team loses their starting shortstop, the contract sucks, but if Boston's willing to eat some of the money and Trevor Story's hitting, you know, he won't be hitting 300, but let's say he's hitting 275 with a bit of pop and he's staying healthy and he's playing good defense, you might be able to convince a desperate team to take on that contract. I don't think he's as unmovable as Yoshida. I think he has more value than Yoshida.
I agree. I think Yoshida is approaching Rusty Castillo status. Like, people don't even think this guy exists. Like, they keep asking Cora, is he ready to play? Oh, no, his arm's not ready. When is he ever going to be ready to play, when he's the only guy on the roster who doesn't strike out a ton and the Red Sox lead the league in strikeouts? Like, if he's not ready to play now, he's never going to play. So I just don't think he's movable. I don't think teams are going to move or trade for a guy that can't even go on the field anymore. You know, like, he can't play the outfield. He can't even DH. So I think he's unmovable no matter what.
Yeah, I think Yoshida Nick's right. He really is approaching, like, just, you know, unknown region. Like, they keep saying, oh, it's his throwing arm. But, like, he's never had a good throwing arm, has he? I mean, not from what I've seen. When he was fully healthy, he still threw like Johnny Damon. So, I think they're just looking for any excuse to not have to deal with the headache of trying to get him in the lineup, because apart from catcher, where are you going to put him? Like, unless Yoshida is going to learn catcher all of a sudden, I don't see where you put him in this lineup where he's an upgrade over anybody. Even Tristan Casas, who, again, has had his struggles, but if he starts hitting the ball 100 miles an hour off the bat, eventually some of those are going to leave the ballpark. I don't think Yoshida can do that right now. So, I don't know. I feel like Yoshida is in no man's land.
I think he does bring more than Casas would. I mean, Yoshida, he was second on the team in average last year. I don't know where he was on base. I'm guessing top three or four. So I think his bat does give you a little bit of value, but what complicates it is he's a lefty and we have a million of them. And, you know, that's all you can do with him. And Devers has first base DH. So I just, that's why he's in no man's land. That's the problem, really. I mean, there's no place to put Devers at this point. Alex Cora literally died on that hill and says, I'm not putting you in no matter what. I mean, Trevor Story's on paternity leave right now, and Devers is still the DH. And Cora said as much a week or two ago that would be the case throughout the season. But I don't know. I just, so many times you see Casas coming up in the 4 or 5 hole, and you know it's an automatic out. And I just feel like Yoshida would possibly, you know, rip one up the gap and kind of keep things moving a little bit, but we'll see. Casas is we'll tease it. Our next show being released tomorrow, gonna be a lot of Tristan Casas talk.
Yep, absolutely. But until Yoshida learns how to play first base, I just don't know what you do with him. But Either way, at the end of the day, good series from Trevor Story. He continues to play really well. His defense has been fantastic. You mentioned the play with Caminero. There was another one with, again, it was Yandy Diaz running. So, you know, that's basically like Benji Molina running. And Story made a similar play, you know, spinning, turned around, threw it, one hop to Casas, and yeah, O'Brien and Merlone were losing their minds. But I will say, at least he has the range to get to that ball. There's a lot of, you know, David Hamilton playing shortstop doesn't get to that. You know, Rafaela, maybe. You know, Marcelo Mayer, I think, would. His noodle arm is not great, but I still think he's an upgrade over what you've got, at least until Meyer's ready. So if he's swinging a good bat alongside that, I'll take it for now. Especially, like Nick said, because he has a right-handed bat too, and you need something from that side. So good series for him, and again, just stay healthy. Just stay healthy and keep hitting.
What's Meyer hitting right now? I'm pulling it up. Last I checked, he wasn't crushing it, but
got off to a hot start, but yeah.
Oh, did he? Okay. He's not doing good at all. Never mind. Yeah, he's hitting 200, couple dingers, but only 50 at bats so far. So maybe he'll step it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just all the more reason why Trevor Story's got to keep doing what he's doing, because Mayer's got to kick the door down, because he's got that heavy contract in front of him blocking him. So, you know, Roman Anthony has a little more leeway because Rafael is just playing himself out of that position, but Mayer has to kick the door down. So it's going to be a little bit before that happens. So we will now head to number one on our top five. I'm pretty sure everyone knows who this is going to be, but Nick, take it away. Who's number one?
It's Alex Bregman. He had his first five-hit game of his career, two home runs, a double, you know, big game. You know, this is what you brought Alex Bregman in for, to bat in the middle of your order, a big right-handed batter. You never expect five-hit game, but he went out there and crushed it. Now that goes on paternity leave, the Red Sox won without him. So we put him at number one for basically one game, but it was a historic game for him. So good for him, and glad they won without him in the lineup. So hopefully he's back on Friday. We'll see. If not, he'll be there Saturday, but I think he'll be back Friday.
Terry.
It was nice to see. You know, we've spoken ad nauseum of all the drama that took place after he arrived, and I think he's just trying to find his place on the team, keep the peace, be the good teammate. I don't know if you want to anoint him as the team leader. He might only be here a year, and following, you know, all the drama that took place. But as Nick said, first career five-hit game. What made that nice to see was it followed the 16-1 game that we lost, and he was 0-for-4 in that game with two strikeouts. And no offense in Major League Baseball was going to save you from Tanner Houck's terrible start. But to come into game two, you had Walker Buehler going, and, you know, we're all kind of hoping he's going to be that middle of the rotation guy that we need him to be. And, you know, Bregman stepped up. Two home runs. Say what you want about Steinbrenner Field, but the Rays had all those chances to go yard as well. And you needed a statement game from one of your key players, and that's what happened. So kind of a bummer you take him out. I mean, after a 5-for-5 game, I would have been curious, what would he have done in game three against a guy like Littell, who pitched okay, but hasn't pitched well for most of the season. So we'll see, but you needed it. He gave it to us, and was a big part of winning. I mean, final score was 7-4. Four of those seven runs came from Bregman.
Yeah, huge game for him. Nice to see the offensive pop there. And it's nice to see that some of his throws are finally not landing in the dirt. that he's actually elevating it and putting it right in Costas' chest over there. So that's good to see too. He should come back this coming weekend, refreshed, new dad, all that, dad power, as they call it. So should have a good weekend at Fenway. We know he plays well at Fenway. So, and again, with the rising temperatures and everything, he should be due for, some more offense here. So, yeah, this is why you bring a guy like this in, because you can plop him into the middle of your lineup. You don't need 30 home runs from Alex Bregman. You just need him to produce. And that's what he can do. He can do it, without necessarily needing power. It was great to see the two homers, but you don't necessarily need that out of him. Just continue to play solid defense, continue to be a professional at bat out there, and he'll keep the offense moving. So excited to see him this weekend. I hope he's back on Friday. Hopefully everything goes well with the birth and everything, and he's able to start on Friday. If not, should be in there by Saturday. So, and he's going to be feasting on some bad White Sox pitching. So should be a good weekend for him. And yeah, this is why you add a guy like this. He's being a leader out there. He's leading by example. And that's what they need right now, because they got a lot of guys who are definitely struggling and definitely try to pull themselves out of it. And I think seeing a guy like Bregman go out and do that, he can help kind of, lift up some of his teammates a little bit. So be good to get him back this weekend for sure. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. As Terry teased, we do have another show coming your way, basically heavily involving the first base position, Tristan Casas, as well as some other first base options we might be looking at in case we have to. So be on the lookout for that. That drops tomorrow. And we'll have our White Sox series prediction show that will also be dropping. And then the Weekend Crew will be back with you guys probably Tuesday morning, Monday night, after the marathon game on Monday. So everyone have a great weekend. Enjoy Marathon Monday. And we'll be back with you guys later. Take care.